Thank you, Brother Chairman, and my dear brothers and sisters in the Lord Jesus Christ. This afternoon, then, we come to the third servant song in the 50th chapter of Isaiah, as our chairman has read it to us, and from the 4th to the 9th verses of this particular chapter. I wonder if you noticed as we read these words how there is again now a definite change in the spirit and tone of this third servant song. We're moving on in terms of the deepening of the trials and labours of the servant, and yet at the same time we notice that there is a change to the spirit and the attitude and the character of the servant himself. You may recall that we mentioned this in our first study, but it might just be a good idea if we review that notion now as we come into the third song and we see what is happening here. So remember that in the first song there was the hint of trial and labour. He shall not fail nor be discouraged gave the indication or the hint in the very first song that there may be difficulties that would lie ahead of the servant, but that although ignored and doubted by some, he would exhibit a patient spirit in the accomplishment of his work. And then in the second song, we saw how that has deepened, hadn't it, to a more specific feeling of anguish and weakness that the servant experiences. I have laboured in vain, he cries. And we saw how that took us into the bedchamber of Hezekiah at the moment of his weakness. How that it takes us in the life of Christ into the Garden of Gethsemane as he struggled with those things that the Father had laid upon him. And we found that the spirit of that second song, as the idea of service deepens in the life of the servant, the spirit of that second song was that the servant, although scorned and ridiculed, you see, those that are against him have become stronger in their hostility, but he is confident. He buoys himself up, surely my right and my reward is with my God. And he buoys himself up with the spirit that God would be with him to guide him and to sustain him. And now then, we come to the third song and we see that there is yet a further change. We're going to find that surprisingly on the one side, that the servant is subject to actually more dreadful indignities than he has ever experienced before. Whereas there are those who have ridiculed him in the past, where there are those who have scorned him in the past, now he is going to be subject to shame and to hostility. I gave my back to the smiters, my cheeks to them that plucked off the hair. I hid not my face from shame and spitting, this third song will say, as the work of the servant deepens inexorably to the end that will come upon him. And yet we're also going to see in this third servant song the deepening of the resolve of the servant himself. And so we have a man who, although tormented and opposed, is absolutely steadfast. Verse 4, my Lord Yahweh will help me, therefore I shall not be confounded, says the seventh verse. I have set my face like a flint. I know that I shall not be ashamed. This is a different man to the second song. This is a man who has grown stronger in his resolve, is it not? And so we see this notion of the way in which the songs develop, the one upon the other, as the work of the servant is unfolded before us. So there are some changes, therefore. Some changes not only with regard to the experiences of the servant, but also with regard to the deepening of his character as he strives to serve his master. And what we're going to find in this third song, therefore, is that although fervent prayer has been answered, although God has answered the cries of his servant, we're going to find that the troubles of the servant are not yet over. The servant has been assured of the divine hand to strengthen and to sustain him, but not to remove the difficulties. The difficulties remain. The trials remain. And if anything, they're going in fact to get worse. So here we've got this idea of deepening service, and yet the spirit of the servant in this song is of a man who is able to confront those now that oppose him with a calmness, with a strength, with a steadfastness, with a resolve that is almost frightening in its strength and in its intensity. There is nothing now that the servant will not or cannot face.
And you see, I think that this is interesting because to me this is the Spirit of Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane. You see, the Garden of Gethsemane is the story of the struggle of Christ, isn't it? The battle, the agony, the contest in the garden. He sweat, as it were, great drops of blood. There was the anguish of the second song as he cried to his God. But you see, the battle was fought and won in Gethsemane, wasn't it? I'm not taking away from the importance of the cross, nor of the crucifixion, nor of the things that were accomplished at that moment of time in Golgotha. But we're saying that there was a battle waged and won in Gethsemane. And the man who steps forth from the garden to meet his tormentors and his accusers is a man with far more strength of character. Whom seek ye? Is the words of Christ in John chapter 18 as they come before him with torches and lanterns and weapons. And you see, the struggle's over. The Lord arose from the Garden of Gethsemane with crimson upon his brow, but he knew exactly where he was going and what he would do. He decided to drink the cup that the Father had placed before him. And the servant of the third servant song is Christ as he steps forth from the garden and walks forward now with steadfastness of resolve to whatever it is that might come upon him. It's that change of spirit, you see, that we've captured in this third song. Let's see then the spirit of the song in our translation. So, my Lord Yahweh hath given me the tongue of the instructed, that I should know how to succour the weary with words. He wakeneth, morning by morning he wakeneth mine ear to hear as the instructed. My Lord Yahweh hath opened mine ear and I was not rebellious, nor turned away backward. My back gave I to smiters, and my cheeks to them who pulled out the beard. My face I hid not from insult and spitting, for my Lord Yahweh will help me. Therefore I am untouched by the insults. Therefore have I set my face like a flint, and know that I shall not be shamed. Near is my justifier. Who will dispute with me? Let us stand up together. Who can accuse me? Let him draw near to me. Lo, my Lord Yahweh will help me. Who is he that condemns me? Lo, they all as a garment shall rot. The moth doth devour them. There's a certain spirit, isn't there, about this third song that advances our knowledge and understanding of the servant and his labours. So you notice how the fourth verse begins then. My Lord Yahweh hath given me the tongue of the learned, or as our chairman rightly read, it's actually the words Adonai Yahweh, isn't it? Adonai Yahweh hath given me the tongue of the learned. Now that's interesting because that's a special title, you see, and you notice that that title is not just found in verse 4, it's the key title of this whole song. It's found in verse 4, and then it's found again in verse 5, and then in verse 7, and then in verse 9. So it's used four times throughout this particular song, my Lord Yahweh, Adonai Yahweh. This is the key title to this particular song. And you know what the word Adonai means, of course? The primary meaning of the word Adonai is that of a master to a servant. My Lord, my Master, Yahweh. And so, you see, this is now the final understanding of the particular master that this servant serves. The master whom he serves is none other than the God whom he worships. My Master, Yahweh. This is who the servant serves. And don't you think that that title, brothers and sisters, in these verses, don't you think that that title indicates now that the struggle in measure is over? The servant has made his decision, hasn't he? My Master, Yahweh. He's made the decision. He has surrendered himself. From this time forth, he will now go and serve the God whom he stands before. And so the fourth verse says, my Master Yahweh, Adonai Yahweh, hath given me the tongue of the learned, that I should know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary. He wakeneth morning by morning, he wakeneth mine ear to hear as the learned. Now, this word learned, by the way, in the Hebrew, the word can mean one of two things. It can either mean a learner, one who learns, or it can mean a learned one, a learned person. Perhaps the best English word to translate the Hebrew is probably the word scholar. Because we use the word scholar in two different ways, don't we? We use the word scholar in the sense of a Sunday school scholar, a pupil, a disciple, one who learns. But we also use the word of a famous man who is learned in his field. He is a scholar. He is a scholarly man. Now, which of those two do you think is the sense, then, of Isaiah 50, verse 4? My Lord Yahweh hath given me the tongue of the learned. Is he the scholar here, the learned man, or is he the pupil? And the answer, I think, is that he is the pupil here. He is the one who is learning. He is not only the servant of his master, but he is the disciple of his master. He sits at the feet of his God that he might learn instruction from him. My Lord Yahweh hath given me the tongue of the pupil or the disciple, the one who learns from his master, and that's the role that the servant plays. He sits at his master's feet that he might absorb instruction. And how exactly, you notice what it says, by the way, my Lord Yahweh hath given me the tongue. You see, this is the same as chapter 49, isn't it? The servant doesn't claim that he has this knowledge of himself. He doesn't claim that he has the tongue of the learned by inherent genius. He's been given it by God. Just as the servant was as a sharp sword and a polished arrow hidden in the shadow of God's hand in the second song, so here in the third song he acknowledges that whatever learning he has in his tongue has been given to him through a process of instruction. Through the opened ear of verse 5, that's how he got given the tongue. My Lord Yahweh hath opened mine ear. How does he receive the tongue of the learned in verse 4? Why, through the opened ear of verse 5. It's given to him by the instruction of God. Now, come and have a look at Mark chapter 7, because here's a marvellous cross-reference, based, in fact, on the very reading that we had read this morning in our reading session in General Assembly. In Mark chapter 7, here's the very lesson of the tongue of the learned of Isaiah chapter 50. We're told in Mark chapter 7, and here's a parable, by the way, which is absolutely unique to the Gospel of Mark, which is, of course, the Gospel of the servant, isn't it? In Mark chapter 7, verse 31, it says, "And again, departing from the coasts of Tyre and Sidon, he came unto the Sea of Galilee through the midst of the coasts of Decapolis, and they bring unto him one that was deaf and had an impediment in his speech." So you notice the problem that this man had. He has an impediment in his speech. He cannot speak. His tongue is caught by a string. His tongue is fettered. Interestingly, the word impediment is only used once in the whole of the New Testament, which is, well, right here, of course. Do you know that word is used once in the Septuagint of the Old Testament? Just once. In the Septuagint translation of the Old Testament. And interestingly enough, the place where it's used is Isaiah 35 and verse 6. The tongue of the dumb shall sing. It's the only place where that Greek word is found in the Septuagint translation of the Old Testament. And what the Lord, by the way, is going to show in Mark chapter 7 is that he is the one of Isaiah 35 who will cause the tongue of the dumb to sing, who will bring forth water in the wilderness. So verse 32 of Mark 7 says that here is a man whose problem lies with his tongue. The problem is that he can't speak. His tongue is fettered. And they beseech the Lord to put his hand upon him. Now look carefully at what the Lord does. Verse 33. He took him aside from the multitude and put his fingers into, not his tongue, but his ears. And he spit and touched his tongue, and looking up into heaven, he sighed and saith unto him, Ephphatha, that is, be opened. And straightway his ears were opened, and the string of his tongue was loosed, and he spake plain. You see, here was a man who could not speak. His tongue was caught with a string or a chain. But the Lord never touched his tongue in the first instance. He went for the ear. He touched the ear first. And the curing of this man so that he could speak was that first his ear had to be opened. That was the lesson of Ephphatha. He didn't say, be loosed to the tongue. He said, be opened to the ear. So what's the lesson of Ephphatha of Mark chapter 7? And the answer is, it's exactly the same lesson as the lesson of the tongue of the learned in Isaiah chapter 49, and that's this. And mark it well. Before the tongue can speak ready and appropriate things, the ear must first have been opened to divine principles. We can never speak forth the principles of the truth unless we have first heard the principles of the truth. That's how the servant receives the tongue of the learned in the story of Isaiah 50 in the servant song. He's only able to speak appropriate things because his ear has been open to the reception of divine principles. And so the verse goes on to say, Isaiah 50 verse 4, my Lord Yahweh hath given me the tongue of the learned, that I should know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary. And here's how it was done. He wakeneth morning by morning, he wakeneth mine ear to hear as the learned. So you see, the servant doesn't receive the ready tongue spontaneously of God. It's not given to him as a gift of God without personal effort on the part of the servant. The servant has to put effort into this. He has to contribute to this process of learning. He wakeneth morning by morning. He wakeneth mine ear. The servant has to participate in this regular pattern of instruction. By the way, I believe that Isaiah 50 in verse 4 is in fact a verse that tells us about the unique instruction that the Lord himself received from his Father. In other words, applying these words to the Lord himself, I think we're given here an insight into the instruction that Christ alone uniquely received. You know that Mark chapter 1 verse 35 says that the Lord rising up a great while before day departed into the mountains, into a solitary place, and there prayed. And there, brothers and sisters, in the stillness of the mountains, in the early morning, so early that the fishermen friends that he had as disciples had not yet risen, the Lord alone in the mountains received instruction from his Father. And I believe that what Isaiah 50 and verse 4 is telling us, in the case of Christ himself, is that he heard in his open ear the voice of his Father speaking, instructing him. Not the voice of an angel, but the voice of his God. The voice of his Father. Wakening morning by morning his ear to hear as the learned. There's something special, you see, about that in the life of the Lord himself. But there's a principle here, isn't there, that applies to all of us. And the principle is that we need to have a steady, regular application to divine principles, morning by morning. We will never mature properly as God's servants if our study of the word is spasmodic. A little bit of study there, a Bible school there, and then nothing for months. That's not how the servants of God grow. That's not how the character of Christ develops within us. It must be morning by morning by morning. There's something regular here. This is what the daily readings is all about, isn't it? The daily manna, the daily provisioning of the word. It's only in that regular intake of spiritual things that our character begins to grow. That's how the word will empower us. If we give ourselves to the word on a regular basis, little and often, is a good idea, isn't it, for Bible study and for Bible reading. Little and often. Now, by the way, morning by morning. I should say this, that I would translate that phrase to read that you've got to choose whatever you believe is the best time of the day to do your study. I think for some of us it is the morning. I tried doing this, by the way, in my early years. I used to rise in the morning and I would fall fast asleep over my study desk, and I found that morning by morning was not a good time for me to have my ear open to hear as the learned. But for me, for some peculiar reason, based on the strangeness of my body, it worked well at night time. In fact, at about midnight, I would perk up. And so you see, I think the principle here is that whatever is the time when we're fresh and when we're alert and when we're able to give diligence to spiritual things, that's the morning by morning process that we should have in our own lives. For me it happens to be evening by evening, but I think I'm observing the principle, you see. You've got to find out in your own life how best this will work. But for the Lord it was early in the morning. And don't you think also that that phrase, morning by morning, I think there's another idea in this passage as well, and that's this. That you see, the servant learns to draw instruction from the circumstances of daily life. Morning by morning, simply the regular turnaround of ordinary, plain, humdrum daily life. The servant learned from those things, morning by morning. We tend to get a little bit like this in life, don't we? You know, same job, same family, same daily circumstances, same ecclesia, same problems in life, and sometimes the very sameness of life acts as a sort of sedative upon us so that we're not really growing. And yet the servant, you see, morning by morning, he wakeneth mine ear. Even in the daily things, the regular turn of daily life, the servant receives instruction and learns things. You know what Brother Robert said, brothers and sisters? Brother Robert said, the ordinary things of daily life are pregnant with our destiny. I like that. The ordinary things of daily life are pregnant with our destiny. You see, the servants of the Lord don't just grow in the great and mighty things. Most of us aren't going to accomplish great and enormous things in life. It's in the little things of everyday life that the servant's character is quietly, slowly, deliberately developed, morning by morning. And the wisdom of the servant of God is that he's able to draw instruction from the ordinary things of everyday life. I often think, you know, of the parables of Christ. A multitude assemble, and the Lord's going to instruct them in divine principles. And he tells them a wonderful story. And you know what the story is about? It's about the fact that his doctrine and his teaching cannot simply be added to the law of Moses. That his doctrine is new and it's different and it's changed. And the whole multitude stand there or sit there, riveted by the teaching power of Christ. And do you know how he built that story? He told them the story of a patched garment. Where did he see that? But perhaps in his mother's house. Joseph dead early, and Mother Mary struggling with a whole brood of children, handing down garments from boy to boy, patching a cloth. The Lord probably saw that in his own house. And out of the story of a patched garment, he drew a wonderful spiritual lesson that enthralled his audience. Morning by morning he wakeneth mine ear, to hear as the learner. To see spiritual things in daily life, brothers and sisters, is a great strength. It's one of the secrets of the servants of God. And what does that all bring him to? What does that enable him to do? Well, verse 4 says, right in the middle of the verse, as a result of all that instruction, the servant knows how to speak a word in season to him that is weary. The servant is one who's able to speak about the practical realities of life. The servant is able to comfort and to sustain others in their time of need. See, this is the spirit of Hezekiah. Now have a look at this. This is an excellent reference concerning the very spirit of the king himself. A word in season to him that is weary. You see what the second of Chronicles says? We're told in the sixth verse, and he set captains of war over the people and gathered them together to him. You notice that? Gathered the people together to him. He gathered them to himself. They rallied around the king. And he spake comfortably to them. In the margin you'll find it says he spake to their heart. You see, here are the people that were desperately worried about the advance of the Assyrian. And as the whole of Jerusalem shivered in their boots, it was the king who rallied all the people to his side and spoke to their heart. And this is what he said, verse 7, be strong and courageous. Or where did he get those words from? Now, where did those words come from? Aren't those the words of Moses encouraging Joshua to take up the work? Be strong and of good courage. And Hezekiah borrowed those words. He drew them from the spirit of Joshua of old. Be strong and courageous. Be not afraid nor dismayed for the king of Assyria, nor for all the multitude that is with him, for there be more with us than with him. Now, where did he get that phrase from? There be more with us than with him. Where does that come from? Anyone know? That's Elisha. Remember? Remember when Elisha prayed that the eyes of his servant might be opened, and he opened the eyes and he saw the chariots of fire and all the angels encamped around them. There be more with us, said Elisha. And Hezekiah beautifully takes up the words of Moses and of Elisha as he encourages the people and speaks a word in season to Israel of his own day. In verse 8 he says, with him is an arm of flesh, but with us is Yahweh our God to help us and to fight our battles. And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. The margin says they leaned upon him. My Lord Yahweh hath given me the tongue of the learned, that I should know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary, and to a people that were weary and fatigued with the advance of the Assyrian and desperate of heart. A wise king who was a faithful servant spoke a word in season to encourage his people in their time of need. That's a lovely fulfillment, I think, in the life of Hezekiah concerning that very phrase. Have you ever had a time in ecclesial life, brothers and sisters, where you've had someone with a problem and you've longed to go up and to help them and to comfort them because you know that they need help and you feel that you ought to do something, and you go up and you don't know what to say? And an older person comes up and in a few short but well-chosen words provides the very comfort that you would have loved to have provided, but you didn't know what to say, but they did. They just had that greater level of wisdom and divine things, greater experience of life and the outworking of divine principles, and they were able to speak a word in season to him that was weary. You see, this is one of the great secrets of the servant, something that we strive to do in our lives. A man hath joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is, says Proverbs 15 and verse 23. And Hezekiah was such a man, and the Lord, of course, himself in his own day. How many people leaned upon the words of Christ as he spoke words in season to the people of Israel? And then verse 5 says, my Lord Yahweh hath opened mine ear, and I was not rebellious, neither turned away back. I was not rebellious, says the song. So you see, the servant is one who doesn't shrink from his responsibilities. The servant is one who manifests an unswerving loyalty now to the demands of his ministry. The servant is not one who is insubordinate. He is always obedient to the principles that he utters and to the God whom he serves. Because we know now that that's who the master is, don't we? It's the God whom he serves. I was not rebellious, neither turned away back, was the spirit of this one. As he faces now whatever responsibilities might come upon him. Now what's the key here, therefore, to the fifth verse? From whence comes this spirit of absolute dedication, of unswerving loyalty to serve his master? Well, I think the key is actually the opening phrase of the verse, that the Lord God hath opened mine ear. Now, you'll probably know that that's an allusion, actually, to another Old Testament passage. What Old Testament passage is this? The opening of the ear, that takes us all the way back to Exodus, doesn't it? And to the special chapter, Exodus 21, concerning the servant pledge. The servant pledge of loyalty. My Lord Yahweh hath opened mine ear. Now, let's just have a look at that then, in terms of what Exodus said about this idea. Exodus 21, and reading from verse 1. Exodus 21 and verse 1 says, now these are the judgments which thou shalt set before them. If thou buy an Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve, and in the seventh he shall go out free for nothing. If he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he were married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master hath given him a wife, and she hath borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her masters, and he shall go out by himself. But if the servant shall plainly say, verse 5, I love my master, my wife and my children, I will not go out free,
Then his master shall bring him unto the judges. He shall also bring him to the door, or unto the doorpost. And his master shall bore his ear through with an awl. My Lord Yahweh hath opened mine ear, or digged mine ear, and he shall serve him forever. So the opened ear of the servant in Exodus 21 is as a result of the fact that he has now pledged himself to absolute loyalty to his master for all time. I will serve him forever. And the open ear was a token of that, as it was bored through with the awl by the master. By the way, of course, you realize that what that symbolized was that the ear of the servant would now forever be attentive to his master's requirements. That's what the boring open of the ear symbolized, that the ear of this servant would now forever be attentive to his master's requirements. Now you see, I think that that's the secret of Isaiah 50 and verse 5, to the man who says, My Lord Yahweh hath opened mine ear, and I was not rebellious, neither turned away back. From whence this resolve to serve his master to the ends of the earth, and to never swerve from that. And there is only one thing, there's only one principle that governs that. He's learnt to love his master. And if we want to be God's servants, and to learn unswerving loyalty, then we will first learn to love God. And only when we truly love God, brothers and sisters, and when we can say that we love our master, will we understand the spirit of service and of loyalty to him. Because true service to the Father is born out of an appreciation of what God has done for us. And the true servant of the Lord has understood that in his life, to the point where he says, I love my master. Mine ear has he opened. I will serve him forever. That's the secret to the loyalty of this servant. His loyalty is not based on his own self-confidence or on his own personal determination. It's based on the powerful principle of love itself. And it's love for his master that enables him to endure the indignities that now come upon him in the sixth verse. And you see what they are. I gave my back to the smiters, and my cheeks to them that plucked off the hair. I hid not my face from shame and from spitting. These are the dreadful indignities that the servant will endure in the course of showing loyalty to his master. I don't think that all of that applied, by the way, in the life of Hezekiah. And yet we do read this, that Hezekiah says these words. Many a time have they afflicted me from my youth, yet they have not prevailed against me. The plowers plowed upon my back, they made long their furrows. Psalm 129, verses 2 and 3. So Hezekiah, at least in symbol, felt that he had endured indignity and difficulty in his life. The Jerusalem Bible captures the drama of this verse when it says this, I offered my back to those who struck me, my cheeks to those who tore at my beard. I did not cover my face against insult or spittle. The Lord Yahweh comes to my help so that I am untouched by the insults. And the servant is prepared to endure all of these things because he's learnt now to love his master. Interesting thing, you know, brothers and sisters, as we come to the gospel records, do you know that in John chapter 18, we might just turn to this one, in John chapter 18, as they come into the garden to arrest the Lord, there's a very interesting comment made that I think fits the spirit of the third servant's song. We're told in John 18, that verse 3, Judas, having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees, cometh thither with lanterns and torches and weapons. And Jesus therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, Whom seek ye? And they answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus said unto them, I am he. And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. As soon then as he had said unto them, I am he, they went backward and fell to the ground. Ever notice those words in the Gospel of John? They went backward and fell to the ground. You see, there was obviously something absolutely awe-inspiring about the man who stood before them. But to me, what those words show in John 18 is the very spirit of the third servant song, which was going to say, I gave my back to the smiters. They didn't take it from him. He gave it. That's what the song said. He voluntarily gave it. It wasn't that they took it from him. They, when they heard him, fell backwards to the ground. But he voluntarily surrendered to the indignities and the insults that would be heaped upon him. And so they would be. If you come to Matthew chapter 26, we're told in Matthew's Gospel that the very spirit, the very words of the song had its outworking in the life of Christ as his end drew near. In Matthew 26 and verse 51, verse 66, they said, what think ye? And they answered, he is guilty of death. And then they did spit in his face and buffeted him, and others smote him with the palms of their hands, saying, prophesy unto us, thou Christ, who is he that smote thee? I hid not my face from shame, from insults. The very words of the servant's song were going to come to pass, weren't they, brothers and sisters, in the life of Christ? And Luke 22 adds, in the 65th verse, that not only did they smite him and spit upon him and buffet him, but they openly blasphemed against him. They blasphemed him, says Luke 22 verse 65, which we'll come back to in a minute. And you see, I think that what the spirit of the servant song was this. He says this. He was prepared to give his back. He was prepared to give himself to the smiter and to the plucker and to the spitter, to all those. But there was one thing, brothers and sisters, as far as the servant was concerned, that they would never get. He says, I gave my back to the smiters, my cheeks to them that plucked off the hair. I hid not my face from shame and spitting. But there was not one thing that he would never give them, never yield them, and that was his ear, because his ear was given to his master. And therein lay the secret of his strength, and the secret of how he was able to continue in the midst of all these insults. You know, there was an outworking of this also, I think, in the life of Hezekiah again, because in the life of Hezekiah, there was, in the course of all this crisis, there was someone who insulted him, who reviled him, who offered words of blasphemy. Now, who was that? Rabshakeh. You see, this worked its way out in the life of the king himself. And so we're told in Psalm 44, which is one of the psalms of the sons of Korah, that I believe has reference to the Hezekianic period, as we might call it. It says in Psalm 44, my confusion is continually before me, and the shame of my face hath covered me, for the voice of him that reproacheth and blasphemeth by reason of the enemy and avenger. And the great reproacher and blasphemer of the day of Hezekiah was none other than